Welcome to Inside Analog Photo. I'm your host, Scott Shepard. The Inside Analog Photo radio program is all about the traditional photographic process. We talk about all aspects of analog photography, including the hybrid workflow. You can find out more information over at www.insideanalogphoto.com. And of course, Inside Analog Photo is brought to you by Fujifilm, making life more colorful. These guys have the coolest instant photography materials known to mankind. They have, of course, the pack film in 3.25 by 4.25 and 4x5, color and black and white. They have the Instax systems in the wide format, the Instax 210 camera and film, and of course the Instax Mini in the Instax Mini 7 and the Instax Mini 25, both in color film. Beautiful stuff. There's nothing cooler than instant photography. You get a print, because if you don't have a print, you don't have a real photograph. This is great fun stuff. This is great for art. This is great for business. This is cool stuff. You definitely want to check them out over at www.fujifilmusa.com/professional, making life more colorful. Our friends over at Photo Publicist, providing worldwide publicity, strategic promotion, social media marketing, and business development for the photographer, turning photographers into celebrities. You can find out more information over at www.photopublicist.com. Our friends at Richard Photo Lab for the highest quality work known to mankind anywhere on this planet. Unbelievable developing, scanning, and of course, output on high quality Fuji Crystal Archive. Unbelievable cool stuff these guys are up to. And remember, you don't have a photograph unless you have a print in your hand, and you need to print your pictures. This is important. You need to supply proofs to your customers and even print your own work, because it's not about looking at it on a monitor. It's about holding a print in your hand. Definitely check these guys out at Richard Photo Lab, of course, at richardphotolab.com. Our friends over at DR5. DR5 Chrome Black and White Developing, that turns your black and white neg into, that's right, black and white chrome. Unbelievable stuff. www.dr5.com. Our friends over at Upstrap at upstrap-pro.com for the camera strap that will not slip off your shoulder, guaranteed bar none, the coolest strap around. Our friends at Iger Studios for the finest quality drum scans known to mankind, igerstudios.com. Our official media partner, APUG, the Analog Photography User Group, for all things traditional photographic process on the web, www.apug.org. And our official philanthropic partner, George Eastman House International Museum of Photography and Film, over at www.eastmanhouse.org. This week on Inside Analog Photo, we're going to have with us Aaron Mutterick. Aaron's going to join us to talk about 3D photography. That's right, analog, three-dimensional stereo photography. We're going to chat about what he's been up to, the different kinds of gear, what he's played around with shooting, and how you can get into making 3D analog film-based images. This is pretty cool stuff. Aaron, how you doing today?
Hey, Scott. How are you?
Good. Thanks for joining us here again on Inside Analog Photo. Great to have you back on the program. And today we're going to talk, Aaron, about 3D photography, stereo imaging that you've been doing now for quite a while that I think is very cool.
Great.
So, Aaron, let's talk about this. How long have you been shooting stereo images? What brought you to the point of wanting to do 3D stuff? Was it a ViewMaster that set off this excitement? What got you started in 3D photography?
I was always interested in 3D. I remember back when the NASA Pathfinder Mars mission landed and they would post anaglyphic images on their website. Then I got some red-green glasses, and 3D is really cool, but those anaglyphic images will make you dizzy and they don't look very photorealistic. And then I would play around with it every once in a while. I got some old 19th century stereo cards and a viewer. They were okay. They were fun. They're like a novelty. And what really started me on the path of taking my own stereo pictures was scanning some old slides from my grandparents. And some of them were taken with a 35mm stereo camera and had a little viewer, kind of like a stereo realist viewer. When I looked at those things, they just jumped out at me. It wasn't just the 3D effect, but the fact that they were backlit as slides that really gave them the dynamic range that made you feel like you were really looking at a frozen moment in time with your own eyes versus a reproduction of an image or a copy of a picture of another place or another time. And from there, I started experimenting with all different ways to kind of reproduce that effect. I mean, I knew that these slides were taken in probably the early 60s, and they looked fantastic. They were Kodachromes. So the first thing that I did is I got a very inexpensive splitter for my 35mm Canon, like a Lorio 3D lens attachment that has a splitter and a prism and a mirror and will give you that same effect. And honestly, I was more than a little disappointed because the format is half of a 35-millimeter slide on either side. So it's a very tall format, and at the same time, just didn't jump out at me the way those other slides had. So I kept looking. I had a stereo realist. I tried taking slides there, and they were good. It was definitely improvement. 5P and 7P, the number of perforations across of each image, the wider you can go, is more desirable with a stereo realist kind of camera. And it solved that vertical narrow problem that I had had. And then I was reading online, and everyone's talking about this new 3D world camera that takes medium format film. And that was very interesting, but it was out of my budget. It was about $1,500 for this camera. So everybody online recommended to me that I should get a Sputnik, which is a Russian camera made in the Lomo factory in the 50s and 60s, and it was a really terrible, terrible camera. A terrible camera in the build quality. I mean, it had light leaks, and the lenses weren't always aligned properly. The focus ring is not smooth, and so turning, you're grinding metal. I mean, it's really incredible that they even bothered to manufacture things with such poor quality.
Exactly.
It really is amazing. But they're cheap, and they were available. And so I went on eBay, and I bid on one. I think it was about $150. It came from Russia to me in its case. Looked like it had never been used. I took some pictures with it, and it did had all kinds of light leaks and problems. And that led me to, this is a box. It's a shell. It's almost ready. How can I bring it up to snuff so that I can take some really cool pictures with this? And I wrote about this on my blog, step by step. Worked on all the different components of the camera, identifying the light leaks, adding felt, adding flocking, adding baffles, taking the lenses apart and coating the edges of them with black Sharpie to reduce internal reflections, grinding down some of the gears that were not produced properly one by one so that things could turn smoothly. Then I shot a roll of film, and I had it developed, and I mounted it, and it took my breath away. Because the realism that you can get with a medium format slide is just beyond anything that I had ever seen before. 35mm, well, let's start with ViewMaster, right? ViewMaster is a tiny little chip. So when you look at it in that viewer, it's like you're looking at a 3D scene, you're standing in a dark room, and you're looking at a 3D scene through a window that's, say, 12 or 15 feet in front of you. When you have 35mm, now that window maybe is 6 or 8 feet in front of you. It's a bigger window because you're closer to that window, but there's still this big black area where you're looking at the picture through that. Medium format, just because of the way the optics work, now you're in a scene where you're looking through that window, but it's as if you were standing 2 feet away from the window. So because you're so close to the window, instead of just seeing the image, you actually can look around inside the image. You can explore the image as you look around. In a sense, the picture is bigger than your fovea, the central part of the eye that captures detail. So your eyes need to move to capture it. And one of the things I noticed that when I would show these slides to people, they would kind of take a gasp, and then they would start turning their head because the picture was so immersive in the viewer that they felt like if they turned their head, they could see more. Of course, then everybody had a little laugh because you can't. But it was really incredible. It was my this is it moment. I couldn't believe that more people weren't using this format to do 3D photography, because it seemed like it had so many benefits beyond 35mm. The camera, especially the Sputnik, was not very big. The camera weighs a pound. You can fit it in a backpack very easily. You can take all of your pictures handheld as long as you have enough light. And very convenient and very easy to carry around and capture pictures of people. In a sense, their 3D pictures of people look like they're frozen in time. It's really amazing. And so I wrote about all this on my blog, and I think had helped hopefully a few other Sputnik owners to repair their cameras to working order. And that's the path that I've been going for the past year and a half, 2 years now.
So where's the best place to start? I mean, let's talk about this 3D lens cap beam splitter type deals. Is this going to get you more of an interest in 3D, or are you just wasting your time?
Honestly, I think you're kind of wasting your time. I think the best thing that you could do if you wanted to have the minimum investment would be to get a bar. You mount your camera on a tripod, you take a picture, you move the camera 52 millimeters to the right, and you take the picture again. And then you use the computer to scan your slides and then mount your images. Or if you did it in a stereo realist format, you could mount those chips in a stereo realist viewer and view them that way on a stereo bar like that. That's the easiest way to at least try it. But honestly, if you're mechanically inclined, you can get a Sputnik. You can spend a couple nights learning how it works, fixing it up. Then you can start taking slides and mounting them for maybe $300 altogether. That includes the viewer and maybe the chemicals so that you can develop your own E6, which was kind of a side project that came off of this because developing E6 has gotten very expensive. So I learned how to do that just in the kitchen sink and really get some fantastic results.
So let's talk about the Sputnik. Do you think if someone wants to get into 3D stereo imaging is to go that route?
I do. I'm always a go-for-the-best kind of guy. Why take mediocre pictures when you can take awe-inspiring pictures? And sometimes it's about the photographer, sometimes it's about the equipment. And not the equipment that it's expensive, but that you're just using the right tool for the job. You could get the 3D World camera. Everybody who owns it, I think, really likes it. It's highly recommended. If you're not a tinkerer or a fiddler and you don't want to get into the innards of your camera, that's totally the way to go because it works right out of the box and it has a warranty and it's a modern piece of equipment. If you are more of a fiddler, then you could go with a Sputnik. And the lens quality is less important because you're taking pictures stopped all the way down. 3D photography is different than regular 2D photography in that you're not using depth of field in the same way. In 2D, you use very narrow, shallow depth of field a lot to control where the person is looking, to control the point of interest in the photograph. In 3D, that's a very distracting and, in a sense, anxiety-producing situation. When the user looks at a picture with a narrow depth of field in 3D, the human eye wants to be able to focus on the close and the far and look around the picture. And when it can't do that, honestly, you get a headache. It's very distracting. You want your 3D pictures all to be tack sharp everywhere. And the way that you do that, especially because in medium format pictures, you have a shallower depth of field than you would at 35 millimeter, is you stop all the way down. And I don't believe I've taken any pictures that were worth keeping at less than F11. And most of them are F16 or F22. And so you have to learn that different method of taking pictures so that you can get a good result.
Aaron, let's chat about lens distance. Let's say if you wanted to do this with two cameras that you wanted to put together. A lot of people make a separating bar and put two cameras together.
Mm-hmm.
What's the difference in lens spacing and how does that matter on the 3D field?
Well, the standard separation is human eye distance, which is, if memory serves, about 62 millimeters, 62 and a half, something like that. Everybody's eyes are slightly different. But that's the standard spacing that you would use. If you had a fixed scene and you had a bar, you take your picture, you slide the camera over that many millimeters, and you take the picture again. But of course, you're not limited to that. And in fact, if you're taking a picture of a really grand landscape, mountains, trees, and real like a river in the distance, you're going to need a greater separation between those two to magnify the 3D effect and really drive it home to the person who is ultimately viewing the image. In that case, you can end up moving your tripod, honestly, 50 feet apart between pictures. And usually the best thing to do is experiment by taking a number of exposures with different distances and then finding the one that you feel artistically brings out the 3D effect enough that people say, wow, but it's not so much that it becomes cartoonish where leaves appear to be gigantic and everything is just much larger than life.
Have you found that using film and shooting on 3D is much easier than digital? Because I know now Fuji has a small little digital camera, but what do you do with the stuff when you're done? I guess you can make a lenticular print that we'll talk about, this whole lenticular deal. But It seems that this 3D imaging lends itself so much to analog and film photography.
Well, this is a real interesting angle because I had experimented with making lenticular prints. And in fact, I have the ability here to make my own lenticular prints, to scan the images or take them off a digital camera, slice them up into lines. I have the lens here, so I print it on the inkjet. I lay the lens down, now I have a lenticular print. And they're cool, they're great. I also have worked with some companies that are in really high-end lenses for lenticular prints so that you can get a really incredible effect where the image is jumping 2 feet out of the front of the picture if you were to print it at like poster size or something like that. But for me, lenticular prints, they just don't pop the way a backlit slide does. And when you're trying to trick the human eye into thinking that this is a realistic 3D simulation of the world, it's not just the 3D effect. It's not just sharpness. It's not just that everything's in focus. It's the fact that things are appearing to the eye to be reflecting light, but the intensity and quality of light, the same way that a real object does. One of the other things that happens when you're viewing slides, I backlight my slides with a 500-watt movie lamp. Some people might think that's overkill, but what happens is when you hit your eye with that much light, your iris stops way down. And of course, when your iris stops way down, you can actually perceive sharper images than you could if your iris was all the way open, the same way that a lens is sharper when it's stopped down than when it's all the way open. And so if it's a daylight scene, if I put a daylight quantity of backlight behind that image, it just increases the amount of reality that someone's going to perceive when they're looking at it.
No, I think that's a great way. Like you said, if you backlight it with so much power that your eyes do adjust and you even get more of the 3D depth.
Mm-hmm. But in terms of lenticular printing, I mean, it can be done. It can look cool. Unfortunately, 3D isn't a fix because there's no natural way to present a 3D image. The lenticular print has the ups and downs that I just discussed. The viewer with a 500-watt backlight behind it is awesome, but one person can look at it at a time, and it is a bit of a silly kind of setup. You're sitting in a chair, you're sticking your eyes in this viewer, you've got this light behind you. I will say the 500-watt light creates a lot of heat. When you're looking at a sunlit image, you also get that impression of warmth from the sun that tricks the mind into thinking that it's a little more real than it is. But the holy grail, of course, is what the TV manufacturers are working on, which is how do you get a beautiful 3D image that doesn't have the downside or the loss of resolution of a lenticular print, but you don't need funny glasses and you can see it from all angles. I mean, it's a really tough problem for 100 optical and physical reasons. If someone could figure that out, they would end up making a lot of money. It's very difficult to see the image. There's the cross-eye method people use online where they post their pictures. You cross your eyes and you can see it in 3D. But you're never going to achieve a mass appeal with that technique. You're never going to have people come into a gallery and you're going to have a half-hour training session on crossing your eyes properly before they're going to look at your fine art pictures. 3D has always been in that bind that it's very difficult to display and there's always lots of little details that can really be a turnoff. Some people, because of their eye distance being different, they find the viewers to offer less than spectacular results. Some people don't have as good 3D vision as they might think they do. Their brain is really creating a 3D world where really they're seeing mostly out of one eye. And again, they're going to miss the effect. 3D is definitely more complicated than 2D.
So what would be a good place for someone to start? Just jump headfirst into a Sputnik? Because basically you can buy these on eBay for a couple hundred dollars roughly.
Over these past 2 years, I've repaired a couple for friends, put them together, and I can tell you that some of them arrive almost in complete working order, and some of them arrive in not so good order, and there's really no way to know. They say at the Lomo factory, some cameras were made on Mondays, and some cameras were made on Fridays. That pretty much defines what level of quality you get, which is what day of the week the camera was made. Of course, there's no way to know.
Right.
But if you look on eBay, there's always Sputniks out there. I think that probably you would buy a 35mm, like a Stereo Realist, or not necessarily a Stereo Realist brand, but some other 35mm 3D camera that you can get for $20 or $25. Try that. Get some slides developed. Look at them in the viewer. Is it appealing to you? If it is, then you can step up to the $150 level and a couple of nights of fiddling and go to the medium format. And once you go medium format, you won't go back. I mean, I really believe that the people who are into 35mm, and I have nothing against them, it's just they've never tried medium format because it's so much more appealing process. But I think that's a good way to get started at a decent cost. If you can spend $30 on a roll of film and a camera, you can take a first roll and you can see what comes out. And it's going to take a couple rolls because it's a different kind of photography. Again, you want everything to be tack sharp from front of the scene to the back of the scene. You are going to have to pay more attention to what's in the background because you don't have depth of field control. Everything is going to be seen. You're not going to have a blurry bokeh that hides something. And you're also going to have issues getting enough light, because even with 35mm, you're shooting stop down so that you can get hyperfocal focusing and an infinite depth of field in the image. And so you're going to have to learn how to deal with that kind of situation.
How do you find that most people are using 3D for? I think that people have accepted 3D viewing because of probably the ViewMaster, so they're used to looking through some type of device to see a 3D image. What do you see the people that are shooting 3D? What are they really shooting? Are they shooting people? Are they shooting just travel photos? What do you see as the biggest use that people are using 3D for that are really into the niche right now?
I think that most people are shooting landscape. That's what I see when I trade slides with people. We send them to each other through the mail to share because, again, it's difficult to make reproductions of these things. So in a sense, in this age of digital everything and copies of everything, these slide pairs are, in a sense, one-of-a-kind objects. Even the reproductions that I've made have not been 100% where I've scanned them and had them printed back out to film. But I think most people are shooting landscapes. For me, as we talked about a Polaroid when we spoke previously, for me it's about pictures of people and capturing a social environment or a social setting. And the idea of freezing people in time is very appealing, especially taking family pictures, taking pictures that might have more personal meaning to an individual versus as a piece of art that someone would want to buy. Because you're really capturing them in a way that goes beyond a 2D photograph, that they're almost alive, but they're frozen in time. And of course, in 30 years, they're not going to look anything like that anymore. So you've captured that. But I do a lot of street scenes, a lot of festivals and people running around. I think I sent you a slide pair of a girl running through a spray of water from the hose. Each water droplet is captured perfectly in the air in 3D. And it's really something to be seen. But I think a lot of people like landscapes, and when they do landscapes, they do the extended bar, where they're doing a major distance between the left and the right eye to amplify that effect. But you can't do that without a very complicated setup. You can't do that with people, because you need to just click the shutter. You can't have them freeze in time and move the camera from one side to the other. You can wire two cameras together with that kind of distance, but that starts to get very complicated.
So when you start pulling the distance between the two lenses apart further and further, the depth of 3D increases then?
The depth increases. So a mountain, which at 62 millimeters difference doesn't move left or right, anything within detection range of the human eye. If you move that camera left to right 20 feet, now you can see that it has a difference. So if there are clouds behind the mountain, now you're pulling the mountain forward and you're creating an impression where the clouds are behind the mountain, whereas before they would appear like they were on a flat plane. And the same thing with everything else in the scene will be amplified. So if you have something too close, it's going to look cartoonish, where the tree is going to look gigantic, because it must be gigantic if it's looking this 3D this close. But of course, that's the illusion of the distance between the two cameras.
Do you find that people still try to produce and manufacture themselves ViewMaster type of 3D photography?
There are a dedicated cadre of ViewMaster enthusiasts. And unfortunately, in the past, I guess, 3 years or so, ViewMaster used to be able to send in your chips and they would mount them on a card for you, or they would send you blank cards. The machine that made the cards broke. So now people are kind of left in the lurch where I guess they're peeling apart cards and taking out chips and putting in their own chips. I'm not exactly sure what they're doing, but I know that there's been a lot of turmoil in that area because the ViewMaster people are a fairly dedicated bunch, but they haven't been able to kind of do what they've been doing for the past 40 years once that piece of equipment broke down. There are some alternatives where you can send in your digital images and have them printed out on a ViewMaster. And the card is actually a piece of plastic that's digitally printed on in the shape of a ViewMaster that you can slide into the viewer and you can click it through. The resolution is not nearly what you would get from a Kodachrome or a Velvia 100 slide film, but I guess you got to work with what you can get.
Have you found that shooting different types of chrome make any difference in the 3D effect or what you see versus Kodachrome versus Velvia versus Ektachrome versus whatever?
Well, unfortunately, Kodachrome was never available in 120 during my lifetime.
Right.
So I would have loved to have been able to shoot Kodachrome on my Sputnik. But I did test all different kinds of film, Kodak and Fuji slide films, settled on primarily Fuji Provia 100F and Provia 400X. 400X is an amazing high-speed slide film. It's really incredible. And those are the two that I alternate back and forth. Depending on how much light is available, I'll either use the 100 or the 400. Keeping in mind, you're only getting 6 shots on a roll, because you have 12 medium format shots on a roll. Now you're doing stereo, so you get half that. So you can go through film pretty quickly. Also, the Kodak 100 speed slide film, the 100G, has a warmer tint to it. The Fuji tends to be a little more greenish. The Kodak is a little more reddish. I like the Kodak film as well. It has a nice warm feel, and if you're in the right scenario, it can enhance the color balance of the image. Of course, you can always do the similar thing with filters. I mean, the dyes are different, so you won't be able to create exactly the same effect. But by filtering the image through the lens, you can also make things warmer or cooler. But those are really the mainstay film. And of course, then you can get into the whole area of black and white slides, which is definitely a do-it-yourself project, because you can send your film to DR5, and they do fantastic black and white development. But for a hobbyist like myself, to pay $15 to develop a roll is a little cost prohibitive. So I do my own black and white slide development. And that also can create a very interesting effect that allows you to be a little more arty, a little more free in your visualization, because you're just controlling tones of light and dark. So it's not a perfect representation of the physical world, but at the same time, everything is, again, full depth of field from front to back, and it can be very attractive in black and white, especially portraits.
So let's talk about resources where people can learn about stereo imaging 3D stuff. I guess if they have $1,500 to $1,800, they can buy a brand new spiffy camera from the 3D world people from China that looks like to be a pretty cool rig. But like you said, it's a little pricey.
That's right. It is a little pricey. But at the same time, I would say it's worth every penny. I mean, gosh, who is making a new film camera these days, especially a 3D film camera? It's definitely a niche. But the source to go to get started is this guy, Dr. T. I mean, if you search for Dr. T 3D online, you'll find him. And he has a full 3D catalog of all different kinds of cameras, all different kinds of mounting equipment and viewers and slide bars. He's really all over stereo, everything you could possibly need. And he also is a really nice guy and a great resource. If you email him and you tell him what you're thinking of doing, he can make a recommendation. And he is also the U.S. manufacturing representative for that 3D world camera. So if you were going to go down that route, you would be working with Dr. T.
And I think there's also some online forums, and there's a Yahoo group.
Yeah. Yes, there's a couple of Yahoo groups. One of them is the medium format MF3D Yahoo group, which is a medium format stereo group. The other thing you'll find in the people who actually use medium format, they're the more geeky type because you have to understand more about your equipment to be effective. If you have questions about optics and what's possible and building your own viewers, that MF3D group is a treasure trove of former optical engineers and people like that who know stereo inside and out. And I found very helpful in asking pie-in-the-sky newbie questions. They could help me bring it down to earth and say, this is the reason you can't do X, Y, or Z, which is helpful moving forward, learning about something totally new. There are some other Yahoo groups for ViewMaster, groups for Stereo Realists. They're kind of hidden because if you search on Google, you might not find any of those discussions. But if you join the Yahoo groups, you can go through the archives, and there's so much information. The other thing that I would say is that 3D was the original kind of photography. I mean, immediately after photography was invented, 2D photographs were viewed as if they were less than adequate. They were not a good representation of the real world. So 3D photographs and viewers for 3D images were put together. Then once silver gelatin photography came in, I think people were happier with 2D prints. They were more socially acceptable. They wanted a big picture to put on their wall, things like that. So 3D went away. In the 50s, 3D came back. 3D was big in Hollywood. There were a number of movies made in 3D using the newly invented polarizing film that Land of Polaroid had come up with. So you would put on the glasses and you could watch movies in 3D. Then 3D went away again, and now 3D is back with a digital edge that we're going to have 3D digital cameras and 3D viewing screens. But if you want to learn about 3D, because 3D hasn't changed, the human visual system hasn't changed, I went to the county library, and they had a huge section, maybe 20 or 30 books, from the 1950s that had been sitting on the shelf, unchecked out, about the optics of 3D photography, techniques of 3D photography, all of which was totally relevant today, but nobody had looked at those books in 50 years. So I would recommend going to the local library, and if they have interlibrary loan, or going to a university library, and you can get a lot of information that way.
Have you had dealings with buying cameras from the Russian Federation?
Everything went smoothly. I would use PayPal, because you have buyer protection there. The things would arrive in 2 to 3 weeks, and they were as promised. I think this stuff is honestly coming out of warehouses that are full of things that were never sold, literally have been sitting on someone's shelf for 40 years plus, and they're just looking to move it. If you were buying DVDs, DVD players, high-end electronics, that's the kind of thing where people can profit from ripping you off. With this kind of almost antique-type purchasing, there's a lot less fakery involved, because the volumes just aren't worth it for the sellers to try and deceive you. I mean, it is what it is.
Yeah, this is great. So let's talk about your website, because I know you have a full rundown of tweaks to do to the Sputnik and some other cool stuff.
My website is cryptocinestographer.com. That's my photography website, where I talk about different projects and things that I've done. That's KryptoSinestographer. It's really a mouthful, but it's the secretive left-handed writer discusses photography and more. In there is an article about how I came to use the Sputnik, different cameras I tried along the way, and then all kinds of tips on templates for how to print flocking paper, to cut it to the right shapes that it'll fit inside, to fix all of the lenses and everything like that. And then there's a lot of detail about different filters that you could use for black and white photography for this kind of camera, and where to get them, how to find them inexpensively, because I never like to spend a lot of money, and then how to develop your own E6 film at home. So that you're looking at, say, $4 for a roll of E6 slide film. If you develop it at home efficiently, $1.50 for development, so now you're at $5.50. And then you're looking at about 75 cents to $1 per mount, so that's 6. So for $12, you can get 6 photos. I probably mount one photo per roll. So for me, the final cost might be more along the lines of $8 or $9 per final image. But if you compare that with other kinds of film photography or 4x5, in terms of the number of final images that you're actually presenting to people, that's not too bad. That's reasonable.
No, I think it's great. And I think one last thing we can touch on here is a lot of people pick up these Polaroid portrait cameras with twin lenses, do stereo print stuff with that, and I guess that would work with a card viewer or maybe the Lorero viewer that's made for the split lens cat piece. So I guess if you want to do instant stereo, you can do that as well.
Yeah, you totally can. There used to be, and it's hard to find, but there was a splitter lens that mounted on the front of a Polaroid camera with the correct eye distance so that you could create those instant stereo images. If you look on eBay, I forget the exact name of it, but you can dig it up and you can find that and you can take instant 3D pictures, which is always fun.
This is true, but they're quite pricey, though. that little Mia splitter for the front. They go for $300-$400
now. They didn't make very many of them. They're hard to find and they're desirable. But there's just so many different things you can do with 3D. It's a whole different world. In fact, I find it difficult sometimes carrying a 2D and a 3D camera. I have to mentally switch. My whole technique changes between 2D and 3D. And I think if you pick up one of those cameras and you try it, you'll see that for yourself. Then maybe you choose just to carry one or the other at a time so that you don't have to make that mental switch.
Yeah, I think you're correct, Don. When you're shooting 3D, it's completely different than when you're shooting 2D photography. Composition and rules of thirds and all these things sort of go out the window. And
one of the things that's making it so difficult for Hollywood is they want to shoot a 3D movie that's amazing in 3D that they can show in every 2D theater around the world and sell on DVD and put on television. And because the way you photograph things is so different between those two, they're very constrained in how much of the power of 3D they can actually use without being just gimmicky, because they can't make a $100 million picture that can only play on 3D screens first run. So they're kind of waiting, like I said, for someone to create an amazing 3D screen so they can go in people's homes that actually works without the downsides. I don't know if it'll ever happen, honestly. But if it did, then you would start to see some really amazing cinematography coming out of Hollywood in 3D.
Yeah, it is quite interesting, but I think that when it comes to still photography, and let's say if you're a professional doing wedding and portrait work, you can offer 3D photography to your clients and have something pretty unique with a pretty much low investment on your end as a photographer.
It's a very low investment. I've recommended having a third shooter doing Polaroid, candid camera type photography. And formal portraits in 3D are the kind of thing that you might show it to the customer and they'll think it's okay, but they'll put that viewer and those maybe handful of slides in a box, and in 30 years they're going to thank you so much for those, because they've really captured, in that kind of reach out and touch them kind of way, these relatives that have passed on, these family members that are no longer with you, and in a way that is so much more real than a regular photograph can handle. I don't know how you sell that, because it's hard to sell people on something they'll appreciate in 30 years, but they won't necessarily see the extra value in today. But it's definitely the truth, and I know that from looking at the slides from 50 years ago of family members, seeing them in their youth in a way that I never knew them, because I hadn't been born.
No, this is a great topic, and I do appreciate you joining us today and sharing your 3D stereo photography, your great website, and all the stuff you're up to, and I really appreciate it, Aaron. This is pretty cool stuff, buddy.
Thanks a lot.
Well, there you go. Aaron Muderick. Great stuff with Aaron. A lot of cool information there. 3D photography is very cool. You can do this on film. You can do this very economical. You can spend a few bucks and buy a brand new rig. But nevertheless, you can shoot chrome and make the most unbelievable three-dimensional object. Pretty cool stuff. Definitely check out Aaron's website. There's lots of great information there. And of course, we'll have more links over at InsideAnalogPhoto.com. We'd love to have your feedback. Email me at radio@InsideAnalogPhoto.com. I'd like to have your feedback, what you think of the show, suggestions, anybody that you'd like to see on the program. Drop me an email. We'll include that in the program. The Inside Analog Photo Radio program has been brought to you by Fujifilm for their full line of instant cameras and film, and of course, fine quality Fuji Crystal Archive paper over at www.fujifilmusa.com/professional. Our friends at Photo Publicist, worldwide publicity, strategic promotion, social media marketing, and business development over at www.photopublicist.com. Our friends at Richard Photo Lab for the finest quality lab in the country, richardphotolab.com. Our friends over at DR5 for black and white chrome at dr5.com. Upstrap for the finest quality camera strap that will not slide off your shoulder at upstrap-pro.com. Our friends over at Iger Studios at igerstudios.com. And of course, our media partners of the Analog Photography User Group at apug.org. And our official philanthropic partner, George Eastman House, over at eastmanhouse.org. I've been your host, Scott Shepard, here on Inside Analog Photo. We'll be back next week with more great analog photography.